We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw. So you think
hey everybody, welcome to the Atheist Experience. We're live. I'm Matt Dillahunty, joining this week Forrest Valakai. How are you, sir?
I'm awesome, man. How are you?
You know, I'm okay. Like 30 seconds before we went live, I had to pick up the one cat that hates to be picked up to get them out of this room so that they don't jump up on the desk, you know, mid-show. But I got it done because, you know, I'm professional.
I'm proud of you, man. That was excellent. I saw you scramble. I was wondering if you make it back in time.
Yeah, I know. I'm just professional enough to do it and just unprofessional enough to just sit here and waste time talking about it on the show. So... This is a live call-in show, so let's take some calls.
Yeah.
We have Christian in the UK who has hypothetical evidence to convince an atheist to believe in God. So welcome, Christian. You got two atheists here. What do you mean by hypothetical evidence?
I'm not
normally convinced by hypotheticals.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you don't have to ask that.
Oh, sorry. Hi. I'm an atheist, but I've been watching the shows for years and years. But I had a couple of questions really to sort of help in my own understanding, especially the nature of evidence, as in sufficient/good evidence versus bad/insufficient evidence. Now, my first question really was, given the nature of divine propositions and the amount of time you guys have given on these questions, do you think that you will ever hear any good enough evidence in the lifetime of this show? That's my first question.
What difference does the answer make?
Sorry?
What difference does the answer make? If I say, I think I might hear evidence, or no, I don't think I'm going to hear evidence, that's completely irrelevant to whether or not there has been presented evidence at all, or, you know, what we think about whether or not there's going to be evidence is independent from whether or not there will be. But no, I don't think it's likely.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, considering the caliber of what we've been presented with so far, I'm not holding my breath, if that makes any sense.
Okay. And my follow-up question was, I know, Matt, especially, you guys have said that you don't really know what sort of evidence will convince you of a God. I personally, as an atheist, I think this hypothetical evidence that this hypothetical situation that I'll present to you, I think if it was to me, I think I will be convinced at least of their claim of being divine. Basically, if someone were to come to you and they say they are divine, and what makes them divine, one of their powers, or their main power, is basically they can genuinely and consistently read people's minds, i.e. they can read your mind, Matt, they can read anyone's mind. Now, will that convince you of their claim that they're divine, or will that just make you think, maybe this is part of the human brain now, science hasn't discovered yet, and then this guy somehow has sort of tapped onto that power. So would you think that they're divine if they can consistently do that, or would you just think it's a superhuman ability we haven't discovered yet?
Okay, you're setting up reading somebody's mind. Sorry?
Yeah, you're setting up a false dichotomy. Would you believe that they're divine, or would you think this is a better explanation? The only question is, are you convinced that they're divine? No, I don't even know what divine means. We'd have to have a discussion about divine. If divine is identical to can read minds, well, then they're divine.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say replace reading their mind with any other mundane thing today that would have been considered divine or magical or whatever, however many years ago. Say, this person has this amazing magical ability to talk to somebody in China and know what's going on at the exact moment that's happening. Well, that's a freaking cell phone. But if you told me that in the Middle Ages, it's extraordinary and there must be magic, they must be divine, they must be whatever. Like, in order for me to say, okay, yes, this extraordinary thing like reading minds or whatever is divine, you first have to prove to me that that's part of being divine, because otherwise, wow, they have superpowers. It doesn't make them a god.
Yeah. If somebody can demonstrate that they have extraordinary abilities, awesome. No problem. They have extraordinary abilities. Yeah. If they then try to leverage that into, therefore they are a god. Okay. Maybe in the very humble God among men kind of category, but
okay. Okay, so basically what you're saying is if the definition of divine means that, you know, you can read people's mind, and in that sense they are divine, but not only that,
because like I don't want to come across as that one guy who is like, well, if you change the meaning of the word penguin, then you can say there's a million penguin or what, you know. That was a few weeks ago, that caller. I just mean to say that, like, that has to be a part of it. It's not to say that that's how we're going to define it all of a sudden, because yeah, we could go change dictionary definition of divine as holy and spiritual and also mind reader or whatever. But I'm saying if they are divine, that comes with a lot of qualifications. There's a backstory there. There's not just I'm divine, so be it. The surprise is, well, what's your lineage like? What world do you come from? What are the physics according to you? You know what I mean? There's a lot there that it would have to conform to, that mind reading would then be a part of. It wouldn't just be that we changed the definition and decided this is what divinity means. You know what I mean?
Even if like mind reading were one aspect of what we consider the divine, that on its own wouldn't confirm that anybody's divine. Just like one aspect of being an NBA player, a professional NBA player, is to be a human. Well, I'm fucking human and I'm never going to be a professional NBA player. So you have to look at each of the criteria for it. So the first thing that needs to happen, if you're going to say, is somebody divine, is to define what we mean by divine.
Okay, fair enough. And the last one, again, in just talking about evidence, I wanted to understand when we mean sufficient or good evidence versus bad or insufficient evidence, because I remember one of the shows I watched, I can't remember who said it on the panel, but they gave an example of one of the panelists said, don't you think that people had evidence that the earth was flat back then, you know, obviously when we thought the earth was flat. So did they have evidence, or was it not sufficient evidence, or because things like maybe that, you know, they can maybe walk on earth, they would think that it's flat and all of those things. But now we have, so basically I'm trying to understand, does evidence evolve? Now we have satellite imagery and astronomy and all of that. Now we have a sort of evolved evidence to know that the earth is round. And is there going to be in 50 years time, 100 years time, like a third tier type evolved evidence that can portray reality in a different light?
No.
That's a good question.
No. At all times in history, you reach the best conclusion you can reach based on all of the available evidence. At some point, it was perfectly reasonable, given the available information, to conclude that the sun went around the earth, because that was what you directly observed. And it wasn't that that information or that evidence was bad. It's that evidence was incomplete. When we gathered more evidence about the earth, we realized that that initial assumption, however obvious and reasonable it was at the time, is no longer reasonable in the face of new evidence. That's what's going on. Either corrected evidence or new evidence is how you refine your model. That's all that's going on here. It's not like there's a third tier of evidence. We just got more information.
Yeah, I was just looking because I was seeing if I could find the guy's name quickly while Matt was speaking, and I can't. But there's an old anecdote about this guy who's a famous mathematician whose name I do not remember. And the story goes that he was speaking to one of his friends in the halls of the university, and his friend said, you know, how is it that we assume that it was just the natural state of things that people thought that the sun orbited the earth? And he, you know, the guy says, you know, well, what you know, isn't it obvious that the sun doesn't orbit the earth? How could people think that this is what it looks like? And the famous mathematician guy said, well, what would it look like if the sun did orbit the earth? What exactly would you see? And the idea is that it's this, it would look exactly like this. And so, you know, in relation to what Matt was saying, is that like we only had a little bit of evidence, and a little bit of evidence can be misleading. And the more evidence you get, the closer you get to the right answer. But the fact of the matter is, you never get to see the whole picture. Reality is what reality is. And all we're doing is building models of it. It's like if I say I had a map from the 1600s, it's better than no map at all, but it's certainly not as good as Google Maps. And Google Maps is also wrong because things are changing all the time. And the earth is what the earth looks like. And a map is just the best that we have. Every model is wrong. Every theory is wrong. Some of them are useful. Right. And so the more we build on our evidence, so I said, I think it's a great question that you asked, because yeah, the more evidence that we get, the more things we learn, these tiers of evidence you're talking about, the more cool stuff we're going to find out. But the idea that we're going to completely and fundamentally change our understanding of reality is a bit off-putting, because what's happened is that like that's happening less and less. We're just getting closer to the truth. We're at the point now where we're not having to take huge mighty chunks out of our perception of reality. We're just narrowing in what we have with new and better evidence all the time. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense for us getting closer and closer to the truth. So, and the evidence that we have today can explain pretty much everything regarding the shape of the Earth back then. It's a closer to the truth type of evidence.
Yep.
And whereas I'm guessing the evidence they would have had back then couldn't have explained certain other things. Maybe they never investigated. But if they tried to investigate mm-hmm. those things, maybe the evidence that they had back then wouldn't have been able to explain that. So are we going to call that insufficient evidence? Surely we're not going to call it bad evidence. We're just going to call it wasn't sufficient back then, maybe.
Well, there's different. There's some evidence that's bad evidence where you have a particular perception that you're going to call evidence and then you find out it's just wrong, just like the data was incorrect. And then there's others where it's insufficient. Okay. It depends. That's two different categories.
Okay. That was a lot helpful. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, cheers.
It will make me think about the nature of evidence. And then, thanks for your time. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Christian.
Great call, man. Thanks so much for calling in.
I got announcements because the first call is over, I always go over and look at chat. And there's people over there in chat, wonderful people, and a couple people who aren't as wonderful, but that's fine. But if you're over there watching, down below the chat's a donation link. This is a nonprofit organization. 100% of your contributions go directly to the ACA. Google and YouTube don't get to collect any of them. If you're not comfortable doing that, and there are benefits to doing that, which I'll get to in a minute, you can also get yourself some ACA merchandise at the merch shop, which is at tiny.cc/merch ACA. This month's shirt is the faith, the excuse people give for believing something when they don't have evidence. That's the special shirt for July 22. And if you shop on Amazon.com, you can support the ACA at no cost to yourself. I've been doing this for years to support charities that I enjoy, some of which the ACA is one of them, Loath Fund's another one. You can go to tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA. And sign up there with the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity. And Amazon will donate a portion of their profits directly to us, which means if you order stuff off Amazon, it won't cost you any money and we'll still get some money.
Thanks, Daddy Bezos.
It's nice. You can also become a member of the organization here on YouTube for 99 cents a month. That'll get you out of slow mode when we go into slow mode and some custom emoji to use here. And there's different levels as well. You can support for more than 99 cents a month as well. You can also go to patreon.com/theatheistexperience and sign up to be a patron there. That does it. We provide as many avenues as possible because everybody likes different ways to support. You can actually, there are a couple of unofficial forums that we've been promoting, which is the Atheist Experience fan group, which is at tiny.cc/FBAXP, and the Atheist Experience private fan group, which is tiny.cc/FBAXPPR for private. I'm amazed they let me tell you about it. Also, there's the ACA website, www.atheist-community.org. You can go there, get news updates. The website's been revamped. That's where we keep policy documents, things about the ACA, apologies or corrections that we have to post, anything like that is over at atheist-community.org. And if you have any feedback, questions, concerns, criticisms, whatever, you can email tv@atheist-community.org. And that goes to all the people behind the scenes, including people who are far better at answering emails regularly than I would ever be. Where was that? There was somebody. Let's do this. We've got John in India.
Hey.
Who is a Gnostic Christian wanting to talk about universal salvation, reconciliation, as I think the only justifiable answer against anthropodicy, which is a version of theodicy, and antinatalism? Hey, John, there's a lot there. How about since neither myself nor Forrest are antinatalists, we just skip that? I don't need an argument against something I'm not in favor of.
Why are you not in favor of that? Because I feel like earlier atheists were questioning the religious people. Now the people within the atheist community are questioning. I call them as antinatalists questioning other belief systems where humans hold.
Well, I mean, like, I'm not interested in having children, but I'm certainly not taking a moral high ground based on that. I just don't want to. So, I don't think people should have children until they're ready. I don't think people should have children until they're financially stable, but I'm also not trying to make a moral judgment based on that.
Yeah, John, all I'm saying is neither Forrest nor myself are antinatalists, so there's no point spending time arguing against a position that we don't hold.
Yeah.
Okay. So I always felt like those anthropodicy and antinatalism was linked to each other. That's the reason I...
No, they're not linked to each other. They're not linked to each other in any... Yeah. So
how would
anthropodicy is a study. It's a potential solution to the problem of evil that puts the issue, it puts the onus on humans. That's separate from antinatalism. And antinatalism is primarily the position that one should not have children, period.
Yeah.
And primarily it comes from claiming that you're bringing someone into a harmful universe without their consent. But let's set all that aside and try to get to your subject. I'll give you a minute.
Yeah, so I was searching for the answers to antinatalism. Then I came to this concept of anthropodicy. So I checked the job chapter where job questions got for all the evil. Then I came to anthropodicy. Like, then I understood with the death of God, with the modern science, like the society, how will humans start asking their parents why did they created them in first place, when they will go through all the suffering, aging, all those things. And with the search to answers to antinatalism, early answers I found from some Gnostic Christians were universal salvation or reconciliation. I was not able to find any other justifiable answers. So that's the reason I have put early. It's only as of the available knowledge. I don't know about the other justifiable answers. So I want to know about the other answers to these questions. Like, why should someone create a life and go through all the sufferings and ultimately death? And so if there's some justice, I think if for a wishful thinking person or something who believes in universal salvation or reconciliation, that can be an answer to anthropodicy or antinatalism. That's what I think.
Just to be clear, are you making that argument or are you just presenting it as something that you learned? Do you think that universal salvation is the only way to justify having children?
That sounds reasonable to me from all the arguments against antinatalism. I couldn't find any other arguments, which seems reasonable to me. I might be wrong. Yeah.
Okay. And there's nothing to say for just, we can make the world a better place where kids don't have to suffer if we all just, you know, get up and do it, because you can't breathe or eat money. And if we can agree on that, then the world will be a little bit better. You're just taking the world exactly as it is and saying, this is the only way that it can be. And if I have children, they're going to suffer and die in this horrible world. And the only way around that is the fact that they live forever with God.
But even this solution is not that perfect, because the argument against this point is that they say is that a non-existent being doesn't have any desires to be deprived. So they doesn't have any desires to go to heaven because they don't exist in the first place. But if you say about the making the world a better place or something, then they argue that this is like something not for the interest of the kid. It's an interest for others. I mean, as the future descendants or future beings or someone. And the argument of extinction comes into point when one day humans might go extinct. So all those things we have worked hard. It's a very nihilistic thing. That's the reason I, when Matt was saying about antinatalism, I always feel that within the atheistic community, that nihilistic thought, right? Questioning other belief systems, which we take as granted, life is gift or something, that belief system, right? So I feel like that's the reason. One thing I find somewhat reasonable within the religious community who believes in it to be a justifiable answer. Others, like Kant's imperative, is that a man should not be used for, I forgot. Okay.
Well, you also said that you believe in this, and you said that you think that the only reason why we should keep having children is if there is a God for them to be saved by. So my follow-up question to that would be, what if, just hypothetically, you were to be proven wrong, if you became an atheist, if you were thoroughly convinced that there is no God anymore and you just didn't believe in this, would you then be against having children entirely?
If I become an atheist, okay, so the idea here is like I was actually an atheist. So this was the main problem of conflict with me, between me and my parents. I was born in a poor family, so I used to question them until I came to know about this anthropodicy. Then it's my wishful thinking and Pascal's wager which made me to take a leap of faith. My belief is not based on some evidence or something. So I might.
Well, that's awful. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So other thing is, I feel like a blind person cannot understand color, right? What if there is a cruel God who created humans for his or her needs? And And they made us blind. God became incomprehensible because we don't have that mental capacity to understand him or her. So
Now you're giving us reasons why you believe in a God. And I'm sorry to say they're not very good reasons, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking if you were to change your mind on God, if you were to become an atheist, would you then be thoroughly against anyone having children?
Yes, I'll consider myself as an anti-natalist in that sense, but I can still see some which are good in terms of color.
Do you not value bodily autonomy at all? Like for me, the only reason I need to have a kid is that I want one. And I can want it for lots of reasons, including I enjoyed my life. I would like to share that with a new life. I took care of my progenitors. I would like somebody behind to take care of my old dotage.
Violate the bodily autonomy of the child, which is being brought into.
No, the child doesn't have any bodily autonomy until it's a child. It doesn't have any bodily autonomy when it's non-existing.
Yeah, so that's an impossibility thing, right? So the harm principle, when we can't take any...
I don't give a shit about the harm principle.
The consent argument, like when you are not able to take...
You're not listening. Someone. Okay, he's not listening. So, no, I'm done. I have a new policy that if I say stuff and it doesn't get addressed and the person wasn't listening to what I actually said, I've been sitting here thinking about what you said, trying to understand it, trying to figure out what your point is and why it's relevant to the show. And so I sat here and listened to you and I offered questions and thoughts. And instead of listening to them, you just went on with whatever you wanted to say next. So I'll let Forrest finish it up and we'll go on to another call.
Yeah, I would say I disagree with Matt slightly on like why to have children, but I do agree with him.
Oh, I'm not saying that's why. I'm saying,
you threw out some reasons. I didn't know if you held them to yourself or not, but I would just say like,
I'm not going to have kids probably. Right? I'm just saying what better reason could I have than those? I mean, I don't need to,
but I don't think
there's any requirement that anybody justify having kids.
I do agree with that. I agree with the idea that if you want to have children and you're medically able to, you should be allowed to do it because it's your body, it's your family. You can do whatever you want. As long as you're not, having children for the sole purpose of, using them for your own purposes. I think that's weird, but like, whatever, man. Like it's your family, it's your tradition, it's your culture, it's your life.
I enjoyed my life and want to share that with somebody else.
There you go. That's lovely.
That's where I started.
Yeah. So like, sure, that's all fine. And I agree with you on that part. So like, I don't think that it's reasonable, again, as I said at the very beginning, to take any kind of a moral high ground and say that by bringing a child into this world, you're forcing them to be alive. You're forcing them to suffer through this, that, or the other. The whole point of, human lineage is supposed to be that we're making things better for the next generation, not that we're just thrusting the next generation into this world to see what will happen. So I wholeheartedly disagree with what you're coming from there, John. And I especially disagree with the idea that some sort of salvation, some sort of God makes it better. I think that makes it exponentially worse. And your reasons for believing in God that you gave were, I'm sorry to say, no more interesting or exciting or compelling than anybody else's. They made me not want to believe in the God that you do even more, because those sound like really bad, horrible, and threatening reasons, really, especially since you brought up Pascal's wager as a reason why you believe. I don't like threats, and I don't listen to people who threaten me. So, like, I'm not a fan of the God you're promoting. I'm not a fan of the morals that you're promoting. Have kids if you want them. Just take care of them. That's all.
All right. I may have a technical problem. There were people in chat that were suggesting something, so I'm talking to tech, but we're going to keep going with calls. And if I have to drop for a little bit, Forrest can keep going on his own there. Here we go. Here's John in Texas who says, there are scientific, historic, and testimonial evidence for God. Okay. Let's just stick with the scientific, because I don't want you to give a crap about testimony. And the fact that historically people believe stuff and claimed it isn't really impressive. So welcome, John. What's the scientific evidence for God?
Bring it on, John.
Okay. Scientific. Well, it sounds
are
like
you eating
your personal test. No, I'm kind of wrapping that up, but
So you are eating. So when I say are you eating and you say no, I'm wrapping that up, that means you're eating.
No,
you're
not starting off with eating.
Bring your gum to class. How dare you?
Yeah. I don't find testimonies. I don't find testimony impressive. I had my own testimony for a number of years. There's limits, but let's start with the scientific.
I would believe your testimony. Like I wouldn't reject your experiences.
Yeah. That's the problem. Thank you, John. If you believe my testimony, you would be mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if I was to give you a testimony of my experience with God, would you reject it?
Probably.
I'm free to believe that whatever you tell me is your best explanation of what you think you experienced, but it isn't confirmation that a God exists.
I don't think it's.
Wow. Wow. Am I going to finish a sentence?
I don't think it's.
I guess not. Go ahead, Forrest.
Well, I was going to, if just to follow up with the exact same thing you said, if I were to give you my testimony of the pixies that live in my attic, would you believe me because I said it?
Well, I wouldn't. I would want to, you know, see the evidence, and I'd be completely open to it. I wouldn't shut it down or rule it out, because there's just too much about the world and reality that we don't know about. And to rule things out that don't make sense to you personally, I don't think that's fair.
John,
so you started why on right. Earth,
and then so you've weird. Already you've already started by framing this entirely wrong. Me saying that your testimony isn't sufficient to warrant believing in God is not me ruling it or God out.
Okay, so let me. I guess my point is, if I was to tell you that I've encountered God and experienced Him, would you automatically shut me down? Is my question.
What does shut you down mean? If you tell me, don't say anything for 30 seconds.
Okay, you were to tell, sir.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I fucking know. If you were to tell me that you had an experience with God, I would ask you to tell me about it. What was the experience? How do you know that it's God? Those are the important things. And then either either your answers then would be sufficient to warrant belief and compelling. Wouldn't be. I don't know what you mean, but you called in about scientific, historic, and testimonial evidence. And I said at the outset, let's set aside the testimony because it's insufficient to justify anything. Let's set aside the history and just stick with the science, because I got a bunch of other callers here. And wouldn't scientific evidence of God be the most compelling that you could possibly get? So bring on, John, your scientific evidence that confirms that there is a God, because you'll be the first in the history of the world to demonstrate scientifically that a God exists.
Okay, so let me use that point, since there has been, I guess, no scientific evidence for God, but most people's experiences are personal testimony. So I'm not sure what you mean by personal testimony.
Just stick to science.
Valid.
Just tell us the science. We're going to disagree, and it's going to be the whole rest of the call. We really want to hear this science.
I've muted John, and I'm going to unmute you, John. Give us the existence of God, or I will go talk to another of the many people who are waiting who aren't going to waste our time going over shit we said don't go over. What's the scientific evidence for God, John?
I got open, because it doesn't sound like you.
Just give us the science.
John, the last time, John, when I stop talking, you should give us the scientific evidence for God or stop.
Okay. All right. So what about supernatural phenomena? That's a scientific.
Goodbye.
You know, that's valid.
Dude, come on.
Nope.
If there was such a thing as a supernatural phenomenon, it would now be natural. If something happens in this world, it isn't supernatural, right? It happened here. It's natural. And fun fact, all the things that you guys call supernatural, we can't test in a lab. Find me a paper, find me a peer-reviewed study showing ESP, showing angel, showing a near-death experience. They don't exist. Because every time we try to test these things, we find totally normal, natural, predictable, really reasonable explanations for all of them. It's like you're not even trying.
They weren't trying. That's the thing. If you're going to call in, bring your A game. And if you're going to claim that there's scientific evidence for God, and we say, give us your scientific evidence for God, and you say, what about the supernatural? Well, I'm sorry, but you just demonstrated that you don't understand science at all, because science is rooted in methodological naturalism. And since there is currently no way to investigate or confirm anything that is purported to be supernatural, there is no confirmation of anything supernatural within science. There's no confirmation of anything supernatural anywhere. You would have to come up with some sort of discipline that allows you to reliably and consistently identify and verify those things that you claim are supernatural and show that they are supernatural and how they interact with the natural world. So you can't just say, what about the supernatural? And then pretend like you've presented scientific evidence for God. It's beneath nonsense. It is at a troll level of a call. I'm not even going to think you're serious. I think we just cut you off before you could prank us.
Yep. I would have asked more questions, but honestly, he already said that he wouldn't rule out the pixies in my attic because he didn't want to discredit my beliefs. Like, yeah, you can do that. You can discredit people's beliefs if they're ridiculous. That's the whole point of thinking.
Yep. Before we get to the next call, I got another bunch of things that we need to announce here.
Oh, snap.
If you think that you have scientific evidence for God, but you want to try it out before you come in here and say things like, what about the supernatural? You can engage in a number of groups where you can have debates. There's an atheist versus theist debate group at tiny.cc/XP fan debates. Also, in addition to this program, the HPA produces a number of different programs. You might have seen Talk Heathen earlier today with Secular Rarity and student Dr. Ben, because Johnny Angel had technical problems, and evidently I'm having some mild technical problems as well. So maybe we'll get Secular Rarity and won't have to talk about how I'm triggered in chat when people refuse to answer the question and don't even attempt to bring their A game. But that's fine. But in between those shows airs the flagship of the atheist community of Austin. I'm contractually obligated to say that by Johnny Angel. And that's the nonprofits Sundays at 3 p.m. With a bunch of new segments covering all your news items, everything that you wanted to check out or wanted to hear what people in the ACA, these wonderful hosts on nonprofits, think about these issues. And if you missed those shows or anything else, you can go to tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. That's your one-stop destination for all of our shows as audio-only podcasts. So if you like XP and you're not familiar with the other shows, it's a quick and easy way to give them a listen and see if you want to tune in live and maybe call in and participate as well. And on that note, I have to thank our amazingly wonderful crew who's sitting back there going, how much jittering and breaking up should we allow Matt to do in his technical stuff before we have him go reboot everything? Because we're not sure what's going on, which is weird because I've got like gigabit internet and I'm the only one home. So maybe I'm under DDoS or something. There are also a bunch of moderators in chat, which I can't go read off all the names, but they're wonderful. Please don't mess with them because what they say pretty much goes. And also we have our call screeners and people taking notes and doing timestamps so that we can get good clips up here that that better present the show. Here we go. I am ready. We have from Australia, pronouns are he, him, who wants to know how we can not believe in a God when he changes lives for the better. So how you doing, Declan?
Hello, Declan.
Oh, hi. I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. What evidence do you have that a God changes lives for the better?
Sorry, I think my internet's bad and there's a bit of a delay, so I'm sorry if if I'm a little bit choppy.
That's all right.
I'm a Catholic. We go to church every week. It's an awesome community. I'm 31, so I'm a bit nervous.
You're all right.
So my dad used to be in a really bad place. Like once I turned around like 14 or 15, I didn't see him too often, and I never really knew why. And if I did see him, he was really unpleasant to be around. My mom never really explained when I was that age, and it was a bit scary because when I was a kid, he was really loving, and he was never abusive or anything. I just didn't like being around him as a teenager. I don't live at home, but I still live near my parents. We go to the same church still, but my dad stopped going for ages. So, I don't want to overburden you guys with the story, but my question was based on how my dad changed, because last year I was really depressed and I was going through a really hard time and I was even questioning my faith, which I spoke to my mom about for a while. She was really helpful. My dad started changing a lot around the same time. He was suddenly becoming a lot warmer and he wanted to meet up and like reconnect with me. And he was coming to church with us again. And he seemed a lot happier. The timing was really amazing because it helped to strengthen my faith again. It wasn't pleasant. So that really helped.
I don't mean to rush you here, but like we have a lot of other callers. What does this have to do with God improving people's lives? And that means that he's real.
Yeah. So I guess I don't really understand how someone can't believe in God when someone like my dad can have his life change so much by God. Like I know that people can change.
Do you think
their
that anybody who believed in any other gods ever had their lives changed by their belief?
I'm sure people did. Yeah.
So how do you not believe that those gods are real? How are you a Catholic and not a Hindu or a Muslim or, you know, believing in some tribal religion where people were really changed by their beliefs?
Well, I suppose it's how I was raised.
And there's your answer. You were raised to believe this thing, and so you do. And the truth is, if you didn't believe that thing, there would be some other reason for some other feeling in your life that you would then think is an awesome thing. And you may ascribe that, give the credit to that belief system or whatever it is, to whatever good thing. But the truth is, sometimes good things happen and sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes belief systems make people better people because they have something to hold on to. Sometimes belief systems make people worse people. The KKK and the Taliban and the Lord's Resistance Army are all faith-based organizations. So sometimes belief systems like these make people much worse, and sometimes they make people much better. And more often than not, you don't need a belief system of any kind to be a good or a bad person. You just need life experiences in general. So you're asking me why I don't believe in your God, as if this gives it some credibility. The fact of the matter is, number one, anything could have done that. And lots of other things have changed you and your father's lives for the better and for the worse that you're not talking about. You just pick this one thing, this God that you care about. And number two, even if for sure proof positive, every single person who became a Catholic became a better person, that wouldn't do a single thing to back up your claims about God being real. It just means that behaving this way is a good thing to do. So you haven't given us any evidence or any reason to believe in this God at all. Does that make sense?
Well, I see where you're coming from. I guess it was what strengthened my faith was the fact that it happened, or he turned around when I was at my lowest point. And it was at,
sure,
I don't know if it was his lowest point, but he was just having so many troubles. And then, right when I was questioning my faith was when it seemed like he was turning around, and his turning around helped me as well. So
do you think that if he had done all these amazing things, if you had had a much better relationship 2 weeks later, if just a little while after that, and it wasn't at a coincidentally convenient time for you, then you wouldn't feel this way today? Or do you think that because this is the way that you were raised, you would still find a reason to say, yeah, no, this coincided nicely? And if you hadn't been questioning your faith at the time, then you could say, I was so strong in my faith, and therefore these good things happen. Like, this is the problem, is that you're making, this ad hoc way of looking back and saying, aha, see how everything is so perfect, it all linked up, when really shit just happened. Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And I was questioning it for a while as well. Like when I was going through my low point, I was reading the Bible more often to try and bring my faith back and figure out what was going wrong, or I was trying to find answers, but it was like I was reading parts of the Bible I didn't even know we were in there.
Right.
And it was kind of eye-opening at the time. And at the time as well, I had some friends who were telling me about this show, and that's just why I called in, because I am, I guess just in a little bit of a confused place.
So you read these parts of the Bible that mattered so much to you. Did you read the parts that are awful and the parts that would say the exact opposite of everything that you're telling me right now?
Well, that's what I mean. I'm trying to be upfront and honest about what I'm, because I'm not with my parents right now, but they would not be happy if anyone was calling into the show, because I've been taught about atheists in the past, and what I was taught was pretty much just that they don't believe in anything, and that
we
shouldn't
assume. We don't believe in God. There's lots of
things. That's really weird.
Just not God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really weird that we keep hearing about atheists don't believe in anything. Atheists believe in all kinds of things, just not gods. And what's curious is that, you're talking about how, oh, it seems strange to you that people couldn't believe in God when God so clearly changes lives. I would be willing to accept that people's beliefs can change their life, including a belief in a God, whether that God exists or not, can fundamentally change people's lives. If you believe that God wants you to do something, you will act differently, whether that God wants to or not. But how do you tell the difference between, hey, a God is actually acting to change your life, and I just think there's a God and I'm the one acting to change my life? I don't know how to tell the difference between those two. And worse, not only are you making this huge mistake of assuming that there is a God that's acting, but you're also assuming that this God is a good God who's acting to make lives better. How did you determine that it wasn't the case that there's a God out there that is making people just be awful, and that praying is what centers the human mind to escape the influence of that God?
Well, that's actually one of the main reasons why I was starting to question my faith, was when I was going through the bad time. I don't want to be specific, but when I was going through the rough patch, I was asking myself, why would God let this happen to me? I didn't really understand, based on what I'd been taught, why my life was going so badly and what I'd done wrong.
What'd you come up with?
Eventually,
why was he letting these things happen?
Well, it was like that question you asked, Forrest, about whether or not I read the good parts only of the Bible. And the only parts that I knew about in the Bible were the parts that I'd been taught at church, which I think is probably, I don't know how many people actually have read the whole Bible, or at least I don't know if many of the people in my church have read much of it. But
most atheists have, at least.
Yeah, atheists know the Bible better than theists. Why? Multiple studies show that.
Sorry, you go.
I was just going to say, man, I like, from everything you're telling me, Declan, I don't think that you're a bad guy, and I don't think that you're stupid. I want to be very clear about that. It sounds like you've been told some boogeyman stories about atheists. I think that your beliefs are unfounded. I think that the things you believe about the nature of the universe, namely the existence of this God, you don't have a really good reason to believe in those things, especially just considering what you've told me, which I understand you haven't told me everything. There's no way you could. But like, just based on what you're telling me here, it sounds like you're taking some very personal, very anecdotal evidence and using it to establish universal truths, which is a bad plan. And the God that you're describing, because you are Catholic, you haven't described your God at all, but just because you are Catholic and you're talking about the Bible, the God that you're describing is something that I think is immoral and evil. And so you're presenting this, you know, really hideous philosophy to me and saying that because you built a better relationship with your dad at just the right time, that this proves this must be real. And now you're calling in, you know, the question it has here at the screener is, how can I not believe in a God when it's making things so much better for everybody? And I'm here in this position of shock and horror for you. Like, how on earth can you believe in something like this when, you know, it's clearly something so hideous and so horrible, and you have such a tiny bit of scope to base your beliefs on? So I just, what I'm trying to get across to you is that everything that you've told me here today, it does nothing for me. And I don't understand why it does anything for you either. It sounds like you already answered the whole question, which is you were brought up this way and that's all you have.
I guess that's it. I mean, it makes sense, but the time when I was reading the Bible, when I was feeling alone, like, I'm not married or anything, so it's pretty much just me and my parents, and I don't have a large friend group or anything, but when I was reading the Bible at that time, I was really surprised with the stuff that was in there that they hadn't mentioned, and I didn't really know why there was so much stuff in there that I was a bit confused by, and why they never taught us anything about the stuff.
They didn't teach you those things because you can't make good Catholics by teaching those things.
Right.
They make more money when you don't know those things.
Well, I asked my mom what she thought at one point. Just asked her if she'd read that part, like Exodus and one other part. She said, oh, she just doesn't believe in that. She doesn't believe that that was written by God. And
isn't that convenient? It's the unerrant word of God that's absolutely right, except for that part that doesn't sound too nice.
Yeah.
Do you remember when the Catholic Church used to burn people at the stake and torture them on the rack for owning a Bible in English? Because then they could read it and hear how awful it was, right? So we tortured people to death.
I just released a video on my personal channel about the differences in the stories between Genesis 19 and Judges 19. Genesis 19 being the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, where a couple of angels show up. They're sleeping on the street. Lot brings them into his house instead of having them sleep on the street. And the crowd in the town comes forth knocking on the door saying, hey, where are those men that you brought into your house? Bring them out here so that we can have sex with them. And Lot's like, oh, no, that would be wicked. Don't do that. I have two daughters who are virgins. Why don't you take them and do whatever you want with them instead? And the crowd's like, no. We want the men. We want the men. And so the angels blinded them. And then they destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, the next day, and his wife was turned into a pillar. And then his daughters got him drunk and had sex with him to get pregnant because there were no more men around. In Judges 19, there's a different story of a man and his concubine who stay with an older man and his daughter. And when they show up, he brings them in, and the crowd comes over, knocking on the door, and is like, hey, where's that man you brought in your house? Bring him out, because we want to have sex with him. Which is really weird, because it just means that evidently either somebody copied a story and got it partially wrong, or people were just running around knocking on doors saying, hey, if there's a strange man in town, we're here to hook up.
Let us fuck your strange guests. Yes. We demand it.
And what's weird, where it's weird in this story is that because the homeowner didn't have two daughters, he had a daughter. So he offered up his daughter and the concubine to the crowd. And they were like, no. But the man just sent his concubine out there anyway. And then she was sexually assaulted all night until she crawled over and could just barely put her hand on the threshold of the door. Meanwhile, the guy that she's with sleeps through the night, gets up in the morning, walks out the front door, sees her laying there and says, get up, we got to go. You don't believe me? Go read Judges 19. She doesn't move. So he picks her up and puts her on the ass. He then jumps off and they go home. And when he gets home, what does he do? He pulls out a knife and he chops her up into 12 pieces and sends those out to all the coast of Israel. Now, I don't think this story happened, but I don't think most any of these stories happened. But I would love for somebody to explain why on earth there's these sorts of stories and this sort of focus. I mean, because even if it was just a metaphor for disobeying God and God and Israelites choosing yet another God and falling by the wayside, and that, you know, God's going to send this raped concubine out to the 12 tribes of Israel so that you can show how far they've fallen. Whatever the metaphor is, you don't have to tell a story or multiple stories about guys who are so afraid of a crowd that they offer up the women folk to be sexually assaulted and raped instead, and then kill them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I asked theists many, many times, if they think the Bible's the good book, would they let me read Bible stories of my choosing to their children? Nobody ever took me up on it, and that's a good thing, because I have more respect for their kids than they do. I don't think it's a good book, and I wouldn't read these stories to kids, and I wouldn't terrorize kids with threats of hell, and I wouldn't terrorize kids with being born wrong and being in need of salvation, all that other stuff. As a matter of fact, you mentioned something. There's a great little graphic that I sent to the team so that they could put up on the screen. We're talking about, you know, why don't people know this stuff? And if you look at this chart, what you'll see is that on a Pew study, they had two different categories. The average number of correct answers out of 34, Christians got 15.7 on average, whereas atheists and agnostics got 20.9. And the number with 17 or more correct answers out of 32, people who got more than half of them right, only 45% of Christians got half of them right, whereas 82% of atheists and agnostics got more than half of them right. And amongst the group that scored the lowest in every category are Hispanic Catholics. Seem to know the less about religion.
In case you can't see the screen, it says here, this is a study on Bible knowledge specifically.
Right. Yeah, I can see it. No. Yeah,
okay, cool. I wasn't sure if you were watching or not, because a lot of people just call in.
Yeah, it's a study on Bible knowledge. It's a Pew poll. And it's one of those things why it's really frustrating when, like, somebody showed up in chat beforehand to suggest that, oh, I've never done honest research and I don't know the Bible. I never claim to be a super expert on the Bible or to know it better than Bible scholars. I definitely don't. I know it better than most Christians sitting in their pews and most atheists do. Like 82% of us seem to have a better understanding of this. What kind of world?
What are your thoughts on everything we just said, Declan?
When the people who know the book best are the ones who don't accept what it says.
Yeah, well, the question is, you said before, where if someone had asked you if you could do a Bible reading for their kids, it was like you said no. Oh, well, no, sorry, you didn't say no more than that you wouldn't want to, because, you know, or they wouldn't want you to, because there's some horrible stuff in there. I would have said yes up until last year. I would have said, yeah, of course, that's where all goodness stems from, you know, Jesus's.
Now, let me ask this. Declan. When you would have said that, is it because you knew the Bible very well, or you would have said it because you didn't know the Bible well enough?
Well, I thought I knew the Bible very well, but I just knew it really well based on what I'd been taught or read to.
But now you know it better, and now your answer would change, right? So as people begin to know the Bible better, the likelihood that they are Christians declines. The likelihood that they are believers of the Bible
declines. What was so confusing? Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. You're fine. You're fine.
Sorry, my connection's a bit bad. I'm in Brisbane.
You're doing just fine.
Mine was so bad, I had to reboot your call.
I lost my train of thought. Yeah, I guess the reason why hearing these things from you and the stuff that I read in the Bible myself is really jarring is just because, I mean, as I'm sure you can understand, based on some of the stuff I've watched, like you were raised in it as well, just been taught that it's really the only place you go for goodness. It's the source of all good. And it's really jarring to read so much horrible things about it and what people say about it and things that are in there. Like, I haven't read those passages you mentioned, but
My friend Andrew Seidel is a constitutional lawyer, and he'll be on the hang up with me on Wednesday. He has a quote which I love, which is the road to atheism is littered on all sides by Bibles read cover to cover.
Yeah. Oh. Like, and that's just if you're in this, because like a lot of people will you know, become deists or just general theists or something. They'll, okay, the Bible isn't real, religion isn't real, but I have a personal relationship with God or this, that, or the other. And it continues to land you back in the same boat where you are now making these weird assertions based on things that you have no evidence for. What I would ask you, though, Declan, is considering all of this, considering the amount of the Bible that you are now reading, considering the stuff that Matt just talked about, I could go on a tangent for a while if you'd like and talk about some of my least favorite Bible stories out there, but just considering all of this, do you still think that the Bible is like the only source for good, or do you think that you can be good without the Bible?
No, I when I was looking into your show and I watched some episodes, like there were Matt, you and some other hosts and people made some good points about why they don't believe and why, you know, they're better off without it. But it's really hard for me when so much goodness that's in my life now that I didn't have last year, up until last year, it is from God.
Is it?
My dad changed from that.
So we covered that a minute ago. We talked about how you only attribute this to God because of the coincidental nature of it and that you don't have any real reason to believe that it's from God. It's just because of the way you were raised. So like,
wouldn't it be
do you want to follow that up? No, you're fine. Do you want to follow that up and say how you know for sure it is from God and not just because your family has something that you're all a part of together? Or do you just want to say it's from God because that's what you want to believe?
I just don't know what else it could have been. It was such a massive change.
That's a fallacy. Saying you don't know what else it could have been is fallacious if you reach a conclusion based on it. Here's the question. If something happened and changed your dad and changed your life for the better, and your default is to attribute it to God because you don't have a better answer, but you have to acknowledge that you don't have any reason to think it's actually a God, wouldn't it be better for everyone for you to say, I want to find out what the actual explanation is for us improving our lives? Because if we find out what actually caused us to improve our lives, we can potentially teach other people how to do this as well. And doesn't that make the world better?
Well, I understand that people can change from secular means. And if someone changes for the better, then I'm glad that it happened.
Don't get me wrong. I'm glad it happened too. I'm happy for anybody whose life's better. I just don't see any reason to credit a God with it. And every time we credit a God with something where that's the wrong answer, that means we stopped looking for the right answer. And that's the biggest mistake that we can make on behalf of superstition, woo, religion, all of these things, is if it convinces you that you have the right answer, now you don't spend any energy looking for the right answer. And if you're actually wrong, then every opportunity you had to have a better understanding just got shot down. Religions, by providing purported explanations that they can't demonstrate, shut down progress. Because who's going to go looking for, you know, why should we solve the climate change if we think God's going to come back and gather us all up before then? Or why should we work to improve anything if everything happens according to God's plan and it doesn't matter what we do? And hey, why should we invest in science-based psychiatry and psychology and mental health treatment if we can just believe that it's all demons and we can pray them away, or we can believe that it's about a corrupt, sinless soul and Jesus will come and fix you for it? Imagine all the things that we would have made no progress on if people had just accepted the religious answers they've been given because they didn't have a better answer. They couldn't think of a better answer. That fallacy, there's two big problems. One is that the perfect is the enemy of the good. And that just means if your goal is perfection, you're never going to be satisfied that you got to a point which is actually good. And then the opposite of that is reaching a conclusion before it's warranted shuts down the opportunity to find the correct answer. But I got to go on to other calls, Declan. Yeah. I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, that was really helpful. Thank you. I'm still figuring this out, and that made sense, which was strange.
Yeah. We're also figuring it out.
Conversations with my parents feel like it's a little more cloudy than the conversation we just had. So thank you for the clarity.
Yeah. Conversations with my parents are black clouds on this area. But so you're not alone. Anyway, call us back if you have more questions, Declan. I'm glad it was a useful call for you. Thanks.
You seem like a super nice guy, Declan. Talk to you later.
Yep. And I'm glad when people's lives get better. You know, I've been busy and I have missed some things this week. I don't know about you, Forrest, but there's so much going on that it's hard for me to keep up with everything that the ACA does. There's nonprofits and Talk Heathen and Truth Wanted and Secular Sexuality.
So much
and
to it's take just in. Like,
what's a person to do? Well, you've waited long enough because the atheist community of Austin has now put together a summary of what you might have missed in the last week. Check this out.
The emphasis on consent, the validation of everybody.
Oh my gosh. I wish that regular everyday sexual education was conducted in the way in which the kink community conducts themselves, because holy, there's so much to learn from that.
Distinct right stuff. I'm sorry, guys. It's we do not protect the individual liberties of every United States citizen when we should be, right? All this does, this isn't states' rights. This is just states being able to take away people's rights.
Catholic Church, you are the most disgusting institution that has ever been created by people. Go yourself with a cactus, pedazo de mierda. You deserve the worst. That's it.
I wish you wouldn't hold back, Teo.
Raising people from the dead. These are all historical things we cannot observe in our modern world. So that's not really...
What do you mean? People from the dead, Charles. Whenever I do CPR and get return of spontaneous circulation, I bring people back from the dead.
Even if it is not a crime... Under the laws of man, it is a crime under God.
Nobody gives a f*** about whether or not your God approves of abortion. Your God is a monstrous thug, and I couldn't give a f*** what he thinks even if he were real.
Big bully, you piece of shit. F*** you, evil bitch. I'll kick your
Cry for me, David. Cry harder. Cry harder that your rights are being taken away. Oh, David, I'm so sorry. I'm a big bully. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. How dare I stand up for other people's rights and make arguments that you can't rebut? It's the end of the world, David. And we're back, and we've got Alex in California, who is a deist who wants to talk about the problem of coincidences that explain an intelligent designer. So welcome, Alex. I have a feeling Forrest is going to have thoughts here.
That's going to be great.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Good to talk to you guys. I told the call center that I'm a deist, which is true, but if I was talking to a theist, I probably wouldn't tell them that. Because I just don't want to go down that rabbit hole with them. You know, I kind of self-identify as an atheist a lot, but kind of secretly I'm way more into deism. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that part. The deism part doesn't make sense yet, but I'm hoping that you get there.
Well, I can provide a definition of deism because I don't really subscribe to classical deism. I feel like it's something that can be expanded to more of like a new world deism. But my definition is our reality was intelligently designed, but from an impersonal entity. That's my definition of deism.
Okay, that doesn't make any sense. Was designed by an impersonal entity. So it wasn't a thinking agent?
Meaning it doesn't interact with the reality that it created.
Okay, that doesn't make it impersonal. That's about its interactions.
I get what you mean, still though. Think.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess
that's pretty consistent with everybody else that I hear on this.
Okay.
Gotcha. And so, like examples of deism that I would subscribe. No, I don't subscribe to, but are ideas of deism that make sense to me is like a simulation theory. You know, to me, that's like a possible deistic environment because it's an entity that's intelligent and created a system, but doesn't necessarily have to interact with it.
Okay. And you think that you have page?
Would you call that deism as well?
I wouldn't, but I wouldn't stop you if you did.
And I wouldn't, and I would stop you, but I'm not going to.
So what do you mean exactly when you say there's a problem with coincidences? I want to hear exactly what your question is, what your thoughts are.
So where I want to center is the analogy of the smoking gun. I've heard it my whole life. You know, it's like, especially in like political commentary where they'll be like, this is the smoking gun or that is the smoking gun. And so when I hear that is that if you say something is a smoking gun, you didn't actually see the gun fire. So therefore the reasoning is that it would be too much of a coincidence for a person to be holding a gun that is smoking to determine, like, to say that there is some other explanation. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, I get you.
The problem, of course, is if somebody is standing somewhere holding a smoking gun and somebody else is dead, you still do a ballistics check to make sure that the bullet matches the gun. You're not going to convict just because it's smoking. But go ahead.
Yeah, but if they were standing near the person and the gun was smoking, wouldn't that be enough to determine that the person
that's enough to make them a suspect.
But like, I think Matt's point is that there is always actually more tests to be done, and at the end of the day, that is still an assumption. So like, yes, that is the analogy, but like, reality is a little bit different. I don't want to nitpick the analogy too much, though. Sure. What is your smoking gun here for deism?
Oh, I don't have a smoking gun. I just want to use that as a baseline for argumentation, because if we're willing to make determinations based on perceived coincidences, because that's what I'm really talking about. I'm really talking about perceived coincidences. So things that, like the smoking gun, would be something that we perceive as a coincidence, but it's actually not, because that person is likely the murderer. So it's not actually a coincidence. It's just a perceived
coincidence. It is a coincidence. It is definitionally a coincidence.
So what's your coincidences for God?
So I wanted to talk about like the Douglas Adams puddle analogy. Are you guys familiar with that? I mean, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, very, because very familiar.
There are certain things that about us that are not coincidences. Like, I feel like that's important to make that distinction between what is clearly not a coincidence and something that looks like a coincidence but may not be. So, because that's basically like the reason why.
I'm going to need you to step it up and come in with an A game. Have a point, make sense. I'm starting the clock.
Okay, so Douglas Adams made the comparison of a puddle, and the puddle is looking at its environment and is saying, "Oh, this environment was perfectly made for me." And so that's a good way to explain things like how the human eyes evolved. Like, it's not a coincidence that a human eye evolved, because there's evolutionary like explanations for that.
Right.
It's not a coincidence that humans are curious, but it's a coincidence that humans can use radio waves to communicate, or it's a coincidence, a perceived coincidence, that we can use fire to cook our food and stuff like that. And I've literally been making a list for a year and a half of things that are functional for humans that are perceived coincidences. Like the fact that we can derive antibiotics from nature to cure our infections. Like, there's so many examples of functional things in reality that are just coincidental that we can use. And I think
I'm confused.
And so this is your evidence that there's a God that created us this way because everything is so perfect for us.
Yeah. I'm confused about a couple things
it's not perfect.
I'm confused. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hold off a second. I'm confused because Douglas Adams' quote is an argument against intelligent design, not for, against. So I don't know how you're using Douglas Adams' quote and saying that this is a version of it with this. I don't know, because Douglas Adams' quote was a treatise against intelligent design. But it sounds to me like what you're saying is, I've been keeping a list of all the ingenious ways that humans have come up with to make use of the world that we live in, and all of this points to an intelligent designer. No, it doesn't. It points to our ingenuity.
It also is putting us as the center of the story, which is the major problem. You're saying that, you know, these antibiotics that we find in nature, like penicillin and mold, for example, that is great for us, and therefore it must be, it's this perfect coincidence. We're not special. We're just here. So there's lots of things that penicillin isn't great for, namely bacteria. So if they're the center of your story, then this antibiotic is a huge problem. It's not a wonderful opportunity that's coincidentally just here for us. So like, you're putting humans as the center of your narrative and then building this coincidental worldview around it. And it doesn't really work that way.
Except that a good chunk of them aren't coincidences, because the process by which we discover and understand and manipulate the world is pretty well understood, and we're tool makers. And so we make better and better and better tools. Once upon a time, a stick was every tool. It was the digging tool. It was the banging tool. Now we have different tools. You might as well say, it's such a coincidence that there's things here for us to eat. It's such a coincidence that there's air here for us to breathe. It's such a coincidence that we can, that you could make a lever, that the laws of physics are such that levers operate or water wheels operate or any of the things that we have managed to take and use the physical features of this world to benefit us. It's us manipulating them. Not that they were, it's so coincidental. It must have been the case that it was handed down. That's none of that is a sound argument.
I also wonder where you draw the line, because like you said that, of course, you know, the eye isn't a coincidence. It makes sense that that would have evolved because, you know, but like all an eyeball does is it takes advantage of a resource. Electromagnetic radiation, light, it's here all the time. We just found a way to make use of it. The same way that pressure waves, sound waves are here all the time. We just evolved a way to make use of them. So when we talk about like fire, for example, that's there anyway. We just found a way to make use of it. You talk about antibiotics, they're there anyway. We just found a way to make use of it. It's like it's the exact same thing. We just did it, you know, through technology rather than through evolution. And even in the course of fire, it wasn't even our species that did that. Homo erectus was the first one to get fire. So like we didn't even accomplish that ourselves. It was our predecessors. It seems like you're drawing really arbitrary lines around things that don't matter and making humans the subject of the story.
Yeah, no, I hear that for sure. Kind of back to the Douglas Adams analogy, is the reason why I bring that up is because it gives a good framework for all of the things that shouldn't be used as an argument for some kind of intelligent design. Because if you can understand how something formed a certain way based on the laws of physics, then you have the puddle, and then you can't use that as evidence at all. But there are things that there are coincidences in reality that go outside of the puddle, like for instance fire, like the fact that we can cook food and it actually is like better for us.
Oh my god,
that
doesn't go outside the puddle. The purpose of the analogy is that the puddle is describing everything that it senses about the container that it's in and how that container was made to fit him perfectly. That container would include fire. That container would include all of the coincidences or non-coincidences that you think you're talking about. All of that is the boundary that describes where the puddle is sitting. All of that is there.
Yeah.
You've misunderstood Douglas Adams' analogy.
But if you're going to call it a boundary, don't you have to have evidence for it? Like that you include fire in that boundary.
God.
Did you have evidence for that?
Alex, we have evidence for fire. Yeah. We have evidence for physics.
I'm not saying evidence for fire.
But the boundary for the puzzle is an analogy.
Fire.
No, the utility of fire is something we invented.
Yeah, and it was just there for us to, it was just sitting there for us to deal with. And I think
it was invented by us. The utility.
No,
we saw what it does.
Not invented.
No. Fire and how to manipulate it was discovered. How we used it was invented.
Yeah, I guess so. But I feel like.
But in any case, it doesn't matter. None of that matters because in the puddle analogy, the boundaries are all the physical characteristics of the universe, which would include fire, physics, and fire is. I mean, you're looking at this at like a macroscopic level, and
I totally disagree.
If I could finish my fucking sentence, I'll let you disagree. You're looking at this. Well, now I don't even remember what I was going to say. So, what do you disagree with?
It's the puddle analogy is about how things fit, meaning the puddle analogy is more connected to like the human eye than it is to.
No, it's not. It's an analogy for all. It's an analogy for all design. I'm sorry that you don't understand that, but that's what it is. I'll read it to you. This is rather as if you imagine a puddle waking up one morning and thinking, this is an interesting world I find myself in. An interesting hole I find myself in. Fits me rather neatly, doesn't it? In fact, it fits me staggeringly well. It must have been made to have me in it. This is such a powerful idea that as the sun rises in the sky and the air heats up, and as gradually the puddle gets smaller and smaller, frantically hanging on to the notion that everything's going to be all right because this world was meant to have him in it, was built for him to have him in it. So the moment he disappears catches him rather by surprise. I think this is something we should be on the watch out. This is about us ruining our world because we think that it's designed, because we don't understand design. The hallmark of design is not complexity or utility. The hallmark of design is simplicity. And design needs to be demonstrated, not inferred or assumed.
Yeah, I guess so. He does mention utility there. So I guess I would be disagreeing with Douglas Adams as well. But
by his own analogy.
What I think is that
that's a good way to be, you know? Clearly, it's a dizzying intellect you have when you're going to disagree with the creator of the analogy because it doesn't fit the narrative that you want to spin when your narrative hasn't convinced either of us either. Maybe it's time to rethink the narrative. Thanks, Alex.
Well, who is he talking to, though?
Thanks, Alex. We have like 10 minutes left and a handful of calls I really want to get to before we run out of time. I'm going to try, maybe this one will be quick because Mr. Warlight, pronouns are he, him in Alaska, wants to have a heart-to-heart with me and say that I'm a Gothic preacher. So Mr. Warlight, tell me what a Gothic preacher is. You can say that I am one. And then what's the heart-to-heart about?
Well, I like to address your condition. That is, you are a Gothic preacher.
Okay.
What is that?
I just said, tell me what a Gothic preacher is, and then you can call me one. And then what's the heart-to-heart about?
Well, the heart-to-heart is, man, you were in a religion, and now you're still kind of there. You were a preacher, but now you're still preaching something.
Okay, I don't care. Do you have a point that I care about?
I mean, basically, like, the Gothic part is you're kind of like, you started off as, like, a preacher in a religion, and then you kind of went from that, like, because, like, something happened to where, like, you don't.
Goodbye.
Like, it didn't, like,
That is not an A game. If you're calling in to give your personal opinion about who I am and what I am, you are wasting your time because I don't care what your opinion is. I don't care if you have a term Gothic. A Gothic preacher is kind of like, if you can't even describe what it is that you're talking about, you're just wasting our time. And that was, you know, cool. You were a preacher.
I don't have anything here like a distinguishing, like, this is what a Gothic preacher is.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything either. I think it's a term that he just made up. But if his point is, I used to be a preacher and I still am. Well, A, I didn't used to be a preacher. I was going to be a preacher. And if you want to say that I am, fine. I have no problem with people saying Matt's a preacher. Because you know what I'm preaching? Humanism, skepticism. I'll preach those till the day I die. Dude, and if any God tries to stop me, I'll laugh at it and keep preaching it. It's so weird. Here we go with Andrew in Maine. Pronouns are he, him. Wants to tell us why the supernatural has to be real. So welcome, Andrew.
Hi. So I was saying the supernatural has to be real because we know from science that both energy and mass can't be created or destroyed, and yet we clearly observe those things in our reality. So there has to be some non-scientific, supernatural, extranatural explanation for that. And that's what I was saying.
So the first law of thermodynamics is that energy or mass cannot be created or destroyed. Sure, we can agree on that. What do you mean that we observe that in our reality?
The reason it's a law is because it's energy or mass has never been observed as being created or destroyed. That's what I mean.
That's not the reason it's a law. So you're already wrong there.
Why is it not a law?
No, I didn't say it wasn't a law. See, this is the big problem I have about reading and listening comprehension with what we do a lot of work here to make sure that we're asking the right questions and clarifying the right things. When you say the reason it's a law is because it's never been shown to be violated, that's not it. If it were, I guess then that would end it as a law. But I didn't say it wasn't a law. I said that's not the reason that it's a law. So as Forrest probably knows this stuff better than I do, although I was in nuclear power school and studied thermodynamics, the thing is that the first law of thermodynamics applies to certain systems and not to others. And while I would agree that given the first law of thermodynamics, we would have to go outside of the universe itself to get a causal explanation for that. That does not necessarily mean that it's supernatural, just because it's not necessarily a part of the local presentation of the universe that we have. Go ahead.
So the other part is, I was actually talking about two laws. So thermodynamics is energy, and then the other law is about mass. And even if you say it came from like another universe, well, where did the mass in that universe come from? So
no,
we didn't say another universe.
We didn't say that, and the right answer is we don't know, then you don't get to pretend like you do.
It sounds like you're just asking what started the Big Bang, and at the end of the day, that's a silly question. You're asking what happened before time started, what happened before the concept of before made any sense in a space outside of literally everywhere. I don't know what you're even asking me.
I'm not asking you anything. I'm telling you that based on these two laws, that science cannot explain the fact that there is energy and mass. That's what I'm telling you. I'm not asking you anything.
So even if I accepted that, even if there was something that we do not understand, you don't get to then say, therefore, it must only be magic. That doesn't make any sense. It would be like me saying, I have this Christmas present here and I didn't buy it, therefore Santa's real. That doesn't track.
There are lots of things we don't know. It just means we don't know something yet.
I literally released a video this morning on my personal channel describing why science can't find God. It answers this question for you thoroughly. And the issue here is if science is able to, science is about knowledge. Science doesn't say there isn't anything supernatural, and science doesn't say we can't explore the supernatural. Science is based on methodological naturalism, and unfortunately, there is not currently a method that allows anyone to verify anything supernatural. If there were a method, that would become a part of science, our pursuit of knowledge. It's not a part of science yet because nobody's been able to demonstrate a method that allows us the ability to reliably investigate or confirm anything supernatural exists. And it may be the case that even if something supernatural exists, that it never manifests in reality in any detectable way. And if something doesn't manifest in a detectable way, then you can't detect it, you can't study it, you can't explore it, you can't come up with an explanation for it. You can't even know that it's there. The God or the thing that does not manifest in reality is indistinguishable from the thing that does not exist.
I think what part of what Forrest said was science of the gaps. I mean, you can't just assume that eventually science will. I guess that's like saying, do you think eventually the laws will be proven wrong? Do you think the consensus is wrong now?
Earlier on in this show. I'm not sure if you were here for it, but as we continue to gather more evidence and better evidence, we get closer and closer and closer to understanding reality, but we're not anywhere close to overturning everything we know about everything right now, or at least it's very unlikely that that's the case. So it's not the science of the gaps. We're saying we don't know, and there's no good reason to say we don't know, therefore it must be magic.
Yeah. Your point, Andrew, at one point was that science can't explain X. And my response to that is, even if you were correct that science doesn't currently have an explanation for X, that doesn't mean that science can't ever explain X. It doesn't tell us anything at all about whether or not X is something real. And until you have something that can explain X, you have not done anything. So if science can't explain X, right now we're in a position where evidently X can't be explained.
Well, my explanation would be it has to be supernatural, not explained by science.
Andrew, that's not an explanation. That is a tautological assertion. You're saying that if it is in fact not natural, then it's supernatural. But you haven't demonstrated that it's not natural. You just haven't been able to demonstrate a natural explanation for it. You are taking You are taking the fact that we can't tell you what it is, and then you are making a declaration about what it is. And that is fallacious reasoning.
It's kind of like how atheists, some say, like, all the evidence points towards no, there is not sufficient reason to believe in God. Well, all the evidence that we currently know points to the fact that there are no scientific explanations for the fact that we have anything here based on all the current evidence. It is a jump to go further.
You cannot reach the conclusion that because there's not currently a scientific explanation, therefore it's supernatural. That is fallacious reasoning. You could be correct, but it is not sound reasoning. You have to actually do the work to demonstrate the supernatural, not just assume it from a gap in our knowledge.
It's deductive reasoning. It is a fallacy, sir.
It is a fallacious conclusion that you can't get from, we don't know what this is, therefore it's supernatural. That is a fallacy.
It's not just that we don't know what it is. It's that it cannot be explained by the laws.
The fact that something isn't explained now doesn't mean that it can never be explained by science. That is another fallacy. You are stacking fallacies on top. No, sir. I'm sorry, but you are now parading one ignorant fallacy on top of another ignorant fallacy and making proclamations about science when you clearly don't understand it. The fact that we don't have an explanation now doesn't tell you whether we ever will, period. That's just a fact.
And even if I want to accept what you said about how, like, sciences, our laws can't agree on this. We don't have the framework. It's the exact same thing. We need to go find that framework. Every single day, I have a hallway right behind this bookshelf. Every single day when I walk down that hallway, it makes a shift in the air pressure and it slams the door behind me. If I didn't know how air pressure worked, if I was completely ignorant of the laws of physics, of fluid dynamics, or whatever, am I now allowed allowed to say for sure that's a ghost and that's true? No, it just means that I need to learn how to learn about the thing that's going on. So even if I want to agree with you for a second that there's something out there that we don't know, that we can't even begin to know yet, we're just three steps away. Also, by the way, a minute ago, you said that what you're saying is deductive reasoning and therefore it's valid. Did I hear that right?
I didn't say therefore it's valid. I said, yeah, it's deductive reasoning.
We don't use deductive reasoning in science for that exact reason. We use inductive reasoning in science because deductive reasoning is rife with fallacies and bias. We use inductive reasoning because that way we look at what the evidence says and draw a conclusion from it rather than trying to rule out conclusions based on the only things that we can possibly think of. That's not how science works.
And also abductive reasoning.
I didn't want to get into it, but yeah, you're right.
Andrew, on that note, we have to go because we're over time.
Okay, well, inductive reasoning is going from small to big, and you got them confused for
it. I find it laughable, and I'm sure people will enjoy that you've decided to lecture us on what inductive reasoning is. Congrats. That's a good way to end the call.
I only went to college for it.
Yeah. On that note, I've only been teaching it for almost two decades, but it's okay. People are going to get confused about stuff. And by the way, for Andrew, not to beat up on him, I know how people look at these things and say, ah, yeah, this just makes sense. But it can feel like it makes sense, and it can still be fallacious. If we're in a position where we don't have an explanation for something, you don't get to just go make one up, and you don't get to say, well, because science hasn't come up with one by now, and science is golly gee pretty smart and figured out a lot of stuff. If it hasn't figured out this by now, it must be magic. No, you're free to give up. You're free to say, my brain can't handle anymore. I'm just going to stop here and go with whatever my best guess is. But that's not what encouraged scientific progress and understanding. It's the people who don't give up, the people who aren't merely just going to accept that some religion asserted this God of the gaps here, and we'll just go with that because it's easier than actually doing the homework. Some of us want to do the homework because some of us would rather be correct than run through our lives with a line of reasoning that is entirely fallacious. Encouraging how we make decisions, who we vote for, where we spend our money, how we treat other people, what rights other people are likely to have, these things all matter. And that's why if there's nothing else that we do here at the Atheist Community of Austin, the Atheist Experience, if there's nothing else that Forrest and I do, teaching people how to think more clearly, even if they wind up disagreeing with us about gods or science or anything else, but teaching them how to actually think in ways that are not bound on fallacies, that lead to progress and greater understanding, may be the most important thing we can do. Absolutely. I just can't guarantee that it's going to stick. On that note, thank you so much, Forrest. It was fun. I can't wait till we get to do another show again. Put the crew up there for fixing my tech issues, or at least letting me reboot to potentially fix the tech issues there. Cat is the one that is absolutely in charge. I know that I didn't have to say that. Everybody already knows that. On that note, please check out the other shows in the ACA. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for your contributions. We'll be back next week, but don't wait all the way till Sunday to catch up, because Thursday is going to be Secular Sexuality and Friday's Truth Wanted, and then Sunday morning's Talk Heathen, nonprofits in between. And then we'll be back on the Atheist Experience. Please take care of yourself. We love you. Stay strong.
Goodbye. What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to start questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys? You think it's any of your business what goes on between my thighs? I wonder when we'll be rid of your It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.